Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Tonight, the topic is men's rights of assertion, the movie The Red Pill, and also Bernie Sanders relaunches his White House candidacy. We will discuss the earth-shaking movie called The Red Pill that everyone's talking about. Plus, we will discuss Bernie and the top three female candidates for the highest office in the land. I've watched 40 minutes of The Red Pill, and I'm going to let Albert take the floor, but this is what I have to say so far. Its basic premise is that these men who are involved in this men's rights movement, and it's different than the Million Man March and those types of movements. It's the basic assertion that we do not have a patriarch society where men are dominant. We have a society where men inherently sacrifice more than women by becoming members of the military, firefighters, construction. Every day they're putting their life on the line, coal miners and all those other types of jobs. And that they're the ones making the sacrifice and that the women are protected. Just like any time a ship is about to sink, the women are protected first and taken off the boat, and the children, and the men are last. So there's like four men who are talking about this type of mentality, and the only one that I thought was a quasi-intellectual was Warren Farrell, who wrote a book called The Myth of Male Power or something like that. And he basically had a lot more to say about it than the other top male leaders in this group. He basically went into the feminism movement and how he was a member of that with Gloria Steinem. And he did his dissertation at Columbia, his PhD on women's empowerment. But he was comparing that to men in the sense that people look at things from only one perspective, how they're taught subliminally through our culture, and that's not always necessarily the case with men. Now, I just want to point out one thing before I pull Albert in, and then Don. I recently dated someone 9 weeks who I was very submissive to, even though he was not my intellectual equal. He was much less educated than me. I made at least $10,000 to $15,000 more than him a year. I'm not trying to overpower the dude, but he just didn't have the intellectual capacity to combat me. He could not manage or handle conflict. He would run away, back down, or cry. But I, through my mother's inherent teaching, I was taught to be submissive to this male, and I gave him practically everything he wanted, but that wasn't good enough. So I was behaving in a manner that followed expectations of generations. Like, all the women in Minnesota were submissive to their partners and their husbands. So with that, that's just a prime example. I'm going to pull Albert in with an introduction, and then I'll pull in Don. Good evening, Albert. How are you doing tonight?
Surviving, as usual.
Good. We're only doing one show tonight. Ben didn't get back to me. John's at work, and Wade's not going to be here. So what is your basic premise from the red pill that this men's movement was trying to advocate?
Well, it's nice to see a different perspective or point of view because, I mean, you hear about feminist movement all over the place and all the time, you know. There's something about this, something about that all the time, and you never hear about this men's right movement. And the reason why is because they've been shut down. Every time they make a speech and make a gathering and try to make a speech, I guess, they're shut down. You know, feminists will go there and say that their speech is hate speech, and not allowing other people to even go in the stadium. And at one point, they even turned on the fire alarm to get them to get out. So you know, that's how things are. And so when I saw the documentary, I got to see this perspective. And, I mean, I saw the movie a month ago, but I do remember, you know, a couple parts where there was only, for women, there was a lot of shelter for violence.
Your phone is turning watery.
Hello?
Yeah, your phone is turning wiggly.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, maybe.
You're going to have to call back in because it's too bad. I'm going to pull in Don in temporarily. Hi, Don, this is Jane.
I didn't know that. Hello, Jane. Yeah, Albert's phone was starting to get whatever I forgot what they call it, but yeah, he was going in and out. But he'll call back. That's great. I marched with Gloria Steinem and Gloria Allred and Bella Abzug back in the 70s. So I've been pushing women to step up their game and become more assertive or at least involved in things that politic and everything else. And now it's coming to fruition. There's an unfortunate dynamic in the communities where men leave their women to raise their children, and that's what's been hampering.
By choice,
you know,
or by force?
Both. I mean, it depends. The men, first of all, they are either leaving because they can't they made everybody made a wrong choice, or because they've been jailed or sent to prison or to war or other avenues where their machismo is either threatened or completely taken away. And so the dichotomy of what a man was to what a woman has been is shifting. Women have taken care of the children, and so they have a stronghold.
They brought that up in the movie, the traditional roles. By the way, Albert, we see you on the line. I'm going to pull you in after Don's done. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the women have been the feature figure for men and for little boys who become men. And that's, you know, the start of a lot of movements. One is the gay marriage movement, and that has further, I would say, indented in the conceivable, the conscious, perceived manhood. But we're at a changing time where, you know, I'm here in Nevada, and we've got majority women Senate for the really first time in the nation's history, and we've got a majority legislature of women. So this is a new day, and I welcome it, even though I hope that, and I just made a, I just talked to a group of UNR students, black students, and high school and college, and told them exactly that you know, they need to step up their game just to keep up with the strong women that are coming forward. So, I haven't looked at the movie, but many of those tenets I have mentioned for the entirety of the show and essentially
right.
The entirety of my life.
I have to pull Albert in because I think he's calling in on two different numbers. So hold on. Albert, did you call in under two different numbers?
Yes, in case my phone starts messing up and I have my other one.
Okay, well, I pulled you in on the 5300 phone, so you can respond to what Don just said. I want to bring one point up before you respond. One thing Don said, that men in the family court system have little rights. They usually side with the mother. So as far as parent absenteeness in the home, sometimes men have less rights in the court systems than women do.
Yes, that's very true. Even in, they show some parts where the woman, when she had the baby, she chose to give it up for adoption and before the
rather than
even,
have the men the, have the, a right?
Yeah, and the man, the husband, didn't know she was going to do that. You know, at the time when he found out, it was already too late. He was trying to do something about it, and he was supposed to already do the paperwork a day before she filed the papers.
I actually know somebody who that happened to, but I can't say their name. They gave the kid up for adoption, and she got pregnant at 21, and then the father's grandmother was going to take the child in Florida, but the woman said, no, I already signed the adoption form for this other agency. So that was that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost if the husband has to be there the whole entire time, like has to follow his wife the whole entire time to make sure the baby doesn't go under adoption, because the wife can give up the baby under adoption at any time she chooses, and the husband just has to go based on trust that the wife won't do it, you know? It's just that's how ridiculous it is, you know? And I think the how they say it, they say, oh, you know, it's a woman's body, and the woman should be allowed to do whatever she wants with her own body. Even Bernie Sanders said that during his speech 2 days ago. He said that during his speech. And, you know, I understand that, you know, to a point of view. But in this situation where a woman could give up a baby for adoption without the husband's knowledge and without the husband's permission.
Well, that's pretty stupid. How many women give a kid up for adoption when they're already married?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be a very unusual situation.
Exactly. And even if he wasn't the husband, I mean, if that's his biological child, he should have a say in the baby's choice as well. I mean, if he's a biological father, then he should have some kind of choice within the matter of what happens with the baby.
Yeah. I went with a friend to an abortion clinic in Virginia, and I overheard this woman say she was married and it was just not the right time to have a baby. And I thought, now that's really a ridiculous decision, like just to say it's not the right time. But I think we should get back to the framework of what the movie was about. So basically,
sure,
there were like four major guys in the movie that were talking, and I might want to add that this is biased by me, but not only one of those men were attractive. The other one had a giant double chin, and there were large segments of the female population that would never be attracted to these men. But like I said, the title of the film refers to the scene in the film The Matrix, in which the protagonist is offered the choice of a red pill representing truth and self-knowledge, or the blue pill representing blissful ignorance and just falling back asleep into their own cocoon and Neverland. But I wanted to say that this Warren Farrell creature, I felt like he was the highlight of the film because he really had a pulse on the women's movement and the men's movement and the differences and the sociological, anthropological representations that society as a whole attributes to each race. Like, for one thing, you hear in every single political election is that women make like 25 cents less on the dollar than men. Now, do you guys believe that, or do you think it's truth or fiction?
It's truth.
Hello?
It's truth if you look at the fact that women don't have the same high-paying jobs. If you look at that connection with also the fact that some jobs don't pay women as much as they do men partially for the protection part, that they do have that perception that they are working harder, risking their lives more, et cetera, et cetera. But additional part of it is that the women just simply have lower paying jobs in general. But, I don't see where we need to have that difference, because women are just as smart, can be just as strong, can be assertive. They are in the military, they're police, they're fire people, and then they can do the job. So partially the testing is graded differently also. So for them to get the job in the first place is a little difficult. If they're moving into a $30,000, $40,000 job where their male equivalent are for the same job or making...
By the way, only 5% of CEOs are women, like top corporate people.
Right. And
want to mention one thing, Don. Katie Walsh of the LA Times, a critic, said that The entire documentary, in a streamlining sense, lacks a coherent argument because it is built on a fundamental misunderstanding of key terms regarding the men's or women's movement. Walsh said the terms could have been better defined to comprehend the ways in which patriarchal systems control resources to exploit both men and women. She recognized that there are many dire and urgent troubles men face that should be addressed, but concluded the documentary only
exacerbates that
divide in an uncritical, lopsided presentation and ability to craft a compelling argument regarding a topic this controversial. Another thing is Cassie J, the person who was the cornerstone of this and directed the documentary, but I'm pretty sure she didn't produce it. She was a 21-year-old girl that she started out in Hollywood at 15 doing like B horror movies, and she realized that it wasn't really her thing. She wanted to do documentaries on topics that interested her. So she ran across this men's movement and decided to do it. Well, after each 15-minute segment in the movie, she does like this video diary of her thoughts. And yes, it is pretty candid because she's good-looking and stuff, and she explores different areas of the men's movement. But really, she's really not old enough or articulate enough to really stratify the last 30 or 40 years of this type of subject material. So, Albert, what did you think of her video diaries that were interlaced throughout the movie? Hello? Let me make sure I have Albert pulled in. Oh, John's on the phone. Hi, John.
I accidentally muted my phone.
Okay, well, we only have a 45-minute show. You have to be on your A game. Ben is on the line, not John. So, Albert, I asked you about Cassie's video diaries that were interlaced throughout the movie. Did you think it was cheesy or valid?
Well, in between. I mean, it could have been done better. I mean, she started to talk about rape culture, but she never came back to rape culture. And there was some questionable things that one of the guys said, and she never asked him about it or anything like that. When she went to interview this feminist woman, one of the clips she got from the woman was like her saying like, well, you know, it's just the way it is, and you know, I don't know what to tell you, and that's basically what she said in her defense, the film was biased and it was towards one way, and you know, and it was really, you know, it didn't really show strong points from the feminist side, you know.
Trying to focus on the men's movement.
Yeah, she was focused on the men's movement, and she did show some minor point of views from the feminine side. But it was primarily focused on the men's movement, which was okay. Even though it was biased and it was, you know, focused was one way, it was okay because once in a while to see one documentary that finally talks about the other point of view, then I'm willing to take anything, even a biased documentary, because all the other feminist documentaries are also biased as well, and they all talk about feminism, and they're all one way. One-way bias film. So, you know, it's finally refreshing to see something. Finally, to hear something from the other point of view, from the other side of the fence. Because, like I said before, you know, when the men's rights movement, they try to make speeches and whatnot, they're shut down. They even fire alarms turned on. They're kicked out. They're not allowed to speak. They're not allowed to say, talk about these real issues. You know. And they do talk about real issues.
Okay,
in the film.
Albert, I'm going to cut you off for a second. I get the gist of what you're saying. Ben, hi, how you doing, Ben? Are you listening, Ben, or are you talking? Okay, we only have 20 minutes left. Go ahead, Albert. Ben's not talking right now.
Yeah. And so the movie got to a lot of point of views. One point of view that was very interesting is there.
But why are you so impressed by the movie? I mean, it's about four male hacks who are trying to reframe the public debate on sex, on gender wars.
It's definitely not the best documentary I've ever seen. Definitely not the best. It's not the worst, but it's not the best. I would say it's in between.
I'm not trying to diss it. I'm just saying, like, I didn't think it was off the chain.
Well, they missed a lot of point of views. I mean, they didn't talk about, the giant disparity of online dating of men and women, because there is a big difference. And when they talk about violence.
Because I just found the man of my dreams on Plenty of Fish.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, yeah, but I'm talking about other issues now. When they talked about violence, they only talked about violence between the marital violence between a man and a woman, together. They didn't talk about violence in school, violence in college, violence at the workplace. Because if they factor in all the other violence in the army, violence in all, at school, men get bullied more and are subject to more violence.
An example for that. And by the way, Ben, you're on the line, so you can feel free to talk. We have a teacher in one of the classrooms who has a really huge problem with anger, and there's three assistants there who want to address it, but they don't know how. And my basic belief system, I'm not going to go into too much detail because I don't want to get in trouble on the air, but he just doesn't know how to he has a rigid personality and he can't adjust to all the changes in the room, even though we work with special needs kids. So we really don't know how to deal with it because we don't want to confront him and be disrespectful, but he's been there for years. Yeah. Now, on the other hand, there's only three male teachers. Just a minute, Albert. Okay. I work in an elementary school. There's only three male teachers out of maybe like 15 or 20 teachers. So in an elementary school, there isn't a lot of men usually. So there is one male speech therapist. But the fact of the matter is that sometimes, well, my ex-husband was a principal of a school, so sometimes men do get involved in elementary schools, and they're perceived as outsiders because it's pretty much a women's profession, teaching K through 6.
Yes. Especially when it comes to, teachers having sex with students. I mean, if a guy teacher has sex with a teenager woman, I mean, he's going to jail. And also, vice versa, the woman would also be going to jail, but it would be treated differently. I mean, they wouldn't get, beat up.
Well,
in
there
jail.
Have been more cases over the last 10 years where women get in trouble. Usually it's 14 or 15-year-old boys they're sleeping with.
Men that are sex offenders get beat up in jail, and women sex offenders do not get beat up in jail. In fact, women sex offenders. I mean, if a woman has sex with an underage kid, that the kid's friends are giving him high fives and telling him how good a job he did, and he's treated different, and the woman's treated different by the classmates. But if it's a man having sex with an underage girl, other men are going to perhaps kick his ass. And treat him, he'll be under violence by probably his dad and whatnot. His dad coming there to kick his ass and whatnot. So yes, so it's very dangerous for a man to do such a thing because he'll be threatened with violence, and vice versa, a woman will not be threatened with violence, so that's the thing on that. But let me go back on what
most
I was
women
talking about
don't even get
that.
Convicted for stuff like that. Okay, we have Ben who's not talking, and now John Yoder just called in, and we only have 15 minutes left. So, John,
sure.
We're talking about men versus women's right in relationship to the movie The Red Pill. And I know you haven't had time to listen, but is there something you have to say about the perception of men asserting rights in society? Is it a completely patriarchal society in which women are victimized, or is it evenly mismatched? Do you have any comments?
From what I understand, the latest statistics say that women actually are winning in the marketplace. They're getting more degrees than men. And
68% of college graduates are now women.
Right, right. So I think in the future, things will be looking very good for women. I'm all for women power. Let women rule the world.
Well, what do you think of the men's rights movement? They say that men take on more dangerous jobs like firefighting in the military. More men die in construction. Like of all the OSHA, there were 4,300 deaths in America last year because of OSHA accidents, like hazardous and safety accidents. And of that amount, 93% were men. Are men at a disadvantage because they're expected to be the protector of society, which the Red Pill movie advocated, saying that men are always the protector, which means they're more disposable, which means they could die easier?
Well, you kind of figured it out, Jane. That's why I'm saying let women rule the world. Why would I want to get a bullet in my head when a woman can go out there and get shot? Or why would I bust my butt building a bridge? You know, 90.
Oops, John's phone call cut off. He'll have to call back in. By the way, you guys, in Korea, in the Korean War, only 5 women died. And in the last 2 wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, combined about 125 women died in the Iraqi and Afghan wars. But still, it was 98% men who died.
Yes. Yeah, it is more dangerous. I mean, even if you have a car accident, right? I mean, you know, violence, if it's a man, another man is going to be violent sometimes. If it's a woman driving, the man's not going to beat up a woman. So, you know, there is the fender bender, yeah. It's always men are expendable and are expected to. Yeah, it's just a type of culture. I'm just saying it how it is. I'm not, you know, specifically on the side of men. I'm more of a equal person. You know, I'm equal on both sides of protecting women and men.
You're just pointing out different things.
Yeah, I want women to be protected just as men. I want both to be equally protected and both to be, you know, I want everything to be fair, but, you know, as fair as it can be, you know. But here's the thing. It's not fair, especially in the United States. There's only one homeless shelter for men only, while all the other ones are women only. And I'm talking about the abuse homeless shelters. The abuse, if you're under, like, if you're a battery assaulted abuse and your spouse or, your husband beats up on you, then, you know, women and children can be taken to this abuse shelter, you know. So and they're all women-only abuse shelters, and they will not take any men. Any men that try to come in, they've been attacked by women, are not allowed to go to these shelters. So there's only one of those shelters in America, only one, but all the other ones are women-only. And that was really crazy because, sure, when it comes to marriage abuse, I mean, most women are being abused than men. That's true. Most women are under more violence than men. When you're talking
because men are physically
men,
stronger.
Yes,
but
men
some
are
women
stronger,
are emotionally abusive.
As a culture, men are more violent. Men are more violent than women, and men are more strong, of course, and more violent than women. And so when it comes to marriage, women in the marriage relationship, women suffer more violence than men. But when it comes to violence and completely on total, when you total violence at school, violence at the workplace,
and violence everywhere else, violence on the street, and everywhere else, the men are under more violence, and you're under more violence by men. So men are committing more violence on men. So it's not the woman's fault. It's just men are more violent. And men are suffering more violence overall. But in marriage, women are suffering more violence. That's true.
Yeah, I agree with that. Don, do you have any comments?
Men,
because we only have 9 minutes left.
Yeah, no, just that the generalities are good, but sometimes true, but the reasons are the differences. Men are brought up to be more violent from childhood in terms of action war figures and race car drivers and things like that, as opposed to Barbie and easy bake ovens. This is something that's culturally instilled. And men have been going to war for, the start of mankind. So there are going to be some improprieties.
There are some gender disparities now, though. There's a fifth grader in my school with really short hair. She dresses like a boy. She has no interest in dolls. And she's forming her personality based on what she thinks she is. So there is some exceptions to the rule.
Oh, no. There are some major changes in terms of acknowledgement of gender at an earlier age. There are parents, and one of my best friends is a gender-changed child, and this is something that they're acknowledging so much earlier. But boys will be feminine, and then feminine will become more feminine earlier, as will girls. So these are things that are changing. This whole culture, the whole world, is changing now. If you had told me that there would be same-sex marriage and some of the other things that are coming up to fruition, so many gender change operations, things like that, I would have never imagined in a million years, kind of like a black president would have never imagined in a million years. But we're talking a change of the entire culture, and we've got to adjust. I had to adjust to what is now becoming the new norm. So we've got some cultural issues that, good or bad, they're there. And I wouldn't, there's nothing we can do about it, in that things are not, they're changing naturally. I don't say naturally, but whatever metamorphosis mankind is becoming. So we've got to be very sensitive to what's going on, because it's here and it can come back to haunt someone or take them down. We see that that Kevin Hart wasn't able to host the Oscars or the Emmys.
Why not?
Because of his statements about the gays. And so that's
I found something out about Kevin Hart. He filled some stadium in Pennsylvania. It was the largest populated comedic event ever in history.
No, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Probably over 150,000 or something like that. I have no, maybe it was only 50,000, but he beat the record, basically.
Right, well, Kevin
Hart. Do you know what he said about gays?
I'm not exactly sure, no. I don't, like I said, I don't keep up with celebrities. They have an altered, skewed vision of life. Anytime that you are, especially actors and actresses, singers, things like that, anytime you're talking about someone else, then you're not focused or concentrating on yourself, then you tend to have some kind of a bipolar psychosis, if you will, schizophrenia. I'm not sure what they would medically call something like this split personality that has to be done for a career choice. But anytime you have that, there's a problem. So, you know, Kevin Hart's just a funny guy, and that's what you can say about him. He made his appearance on the basketball court with the celebrity basketball game during the All-Star games years ago, and he really is in the niche with his health kick and all that stuff. He made a niche for himself, so he deserves to have those full stadiums. But the popular general.
By the way, we only have 4 minutes left, so maybe we'll give Albert a chance to do a conclusion.
He's not too sensitive. You bet. Go ahead.
Albert?
Well, I just wanted to finish up on the what I was talking about, right? And so, on the violence, definitely, it depends where you aim it at, but yeah, it could be one or the other. And if you look at besides America and other countries, the movie also mentioned, you know, about how many men, how like the terrorists ended killing thousands and thousands of men, and there was only one article written about it in the New York Times, and that was it. And, like, the mainstream media never covered it at all. And then many times it happened where many men were massacred, that when women were kidnapped by the terrorists, there was a big international media, in the Western media, and it was the famous term is, you know, bring back our women, right? Bring back the women, right? And because these women were kidnapped from school, they were taken out of their school and they were kidnapped. And these terrorists weren't against women or anything like that. They weren't generally against women. They're just against anybody learning the Western culture. They didn't want anybody learning about the Western culture, because they didn't like the West. They don't like the Western culture. So that's why they were kidnapped out of school. And so you even heard Miss Barack Obama. She was like, yeah, you know, she made a speech and everything about bringing our women home. And there was a lot of promotions and talks and all over the mainstream media. But when men are being killed, there's nothing's done about it, nothing said about it. So it was really interesting how the movie got into that.
Well, what kind of a conclusion do you think is you're making, Albert?
Because I didn't get to finish what I was talking about, so I wanted to mention that and what I was talking about 10 minutes ago, but 15 minutes ago. But yeah, no, I don't really have a conclusion. I mean, it's just some point of view to look at on violence.
Okay. And, I just wanted to say that women are they have proved themselves to be equal. They're proving themselves every day. And I've fought most of my life for them. So, you know, I have compunction to let them take over some of the responsibilities that men have put on themselves to carry the entire weight of the world on their shoulders. So, you know, it's kind of like go women.
Well, definitely. I mean, I hope the best for any woman. But I expect the fairness for all genders. All genders should be fair, equally treated. But the sad part is, you hear, like, you know, 98% of men are dying in everywhere. They're dying in workplace. They're dying in war. I mean, more men are dying. Okay. And then you when you talk about dating, when I was trying to talk about dating a while ago, but I didn't get to finish my sentence. But anyways, I wanted to mention how in China, right, there's four times more men in China than there are women. And so when you see men buying women in China, and women are okay with that. They're perfectly okay with that. So as long as they get a rich husband, you know, they're okay. They measure up the match to see how much money he has, and the man goes and buys the woman, and that's okay. And that's what they're doing in China, right? You know what I mean? And they're doing that in other countries, in other, and that's a fully developed country, by the way. But they're also doing it in other third world countries.